about the faithful few. There is a faithful few. And it's like speaking to the Alleluia chorus, right? Yeah. So, but I, you know, regardless, I think it's important where one or two are gathered, we can make an impact on the world. And I think I'll try to go slowly. I'm a fast talker, but I will try to go slowly. Yeah. So, you know, when they said, okay, look at the role of the church, and I was like, well, isn't that one of those duh talks? Like, everybody already knows, right? And then it starts hitting you. It's like, well, you know, we might actually have a variation of thoughts or different thoughts on this. And it made me think about why I thought it was just natural to think that this is the church. It's not just the role of the church. It is the church. And so I thought about being a developmental psychologist. I'm always interested in somebody's history or where they came from. And I thought about my own. And, you know, I was born in Canada, and my parents were both immigrants. My mother came on a refugee boat, and my father, after World War II, left his country. And they, you know, they both ended up in Canada, and English wasn't my first language. We were the only Adventists in a Catholic, French Catholic, and Scottish Protestant environment. And I didn't know the language. And so I always, I guess I grew up very poor, immigrant parents, and I grew up marginalized, but I didn't know it. It was amazing how the value system in my family just made me always think I was a very privileged child growing up in a great area. And so I started thinking about what were, you know, because we talked about how we need for global health, we need to move to value-based health. And so I was trying to think about what were the main values that I remembered as a child that allowed me to believe such a healthy way. And of course the first one was I was raised in a family where the love to God and others, not necessarily self, and I think that's not uncommon in our denomination, but the love to God and others drives everything. The other thing, being from poor immigrant parents, was that we were too poor to afford to do or have anything that was poorly done. You know, we couldn't replace it. It had to be done and done well, and you didn't do cheap things or buy cheap things. The other thing was then, was that, you know, that fish thing, you know, and how, you know, it made me think about, you know, Dr. Williams was talking about how SES is so tied to your health. And I was starting to think, you know, my parents, they didn't know those, all of those. They were not schooled that way. They didn't know all these theories and all of that kind of thing. But they definitely never wanted me to just have somebody give me something. They wanted me to learn how to get it. So that whole being taught to fish was like, even now today, it's like, no, don't do that for me. I want you to show me how to do it, right? So it wasn't, I never wanted people to give me fish. I wanted to learn how to fish. Not that I'm a fisherman, and Gary would like that analogy, but, you know, but I, you know, so that was, and so the doing unto others, the fishing, the love, all of that was there. But one of the ones, because I look at my life, and perhaps maybe the imbalance of it sometimes, I will never forget, I was about 4 years old, four or five, and I had woken up early on a Sunday morning. And my grandfather was walking down the stairs, because we all lived together, we immigrant family, you know, it was not uncommon for all the extended family. And my grandfather walked downstairs, and he seemed a little disgusted that everybody was still sleeping. It was 7 o'clock Sunday morning. And he said, Kato, because that was my Latvian name, and he said, Kato, everybody remembers to rest the seventh day, but they forget the command is 6 days shalt thou labor. And so I look at those value systems, and I look at how that's impacted my life. I also look how it impacted my parents, who came penniless and became middle-class Canadians. And also, I looked at the value system of those around me who came into the church, and how all of them kind of said, wow, when I came to the church, you could see their SES change. I couldn't find data on that, but I have seen it happen over and over again. there's a wealth, I guess, in the relationships, the connections you make, or maybe the value you place on life. I don't know what all of those variables are, but I believe that the church also offers some help in the SES movement. Perhaps not changing categories if you're in that, but there's something about it. So that's why for me, this is the church. We are about change and we are about prevention. But regardless of that long introduction, I really think there's amazing things that we can think about that we can do. And of course, I believe, as Sir Francis of Assisi, it really comes from the belief that we must have that unalienable right that Dr. Handyside said of really that we have to have value for each other's human life. So what is needed for change? Jean Duff said, you know, what faith-based organizations can offer that can really change global health patterns is that they have extensive networks, that they can be committed because this is their community and their membership. They can be trusted because if you don't trust your church, I'm not sure you would continue to be a member of it. I mean, I think we have varying degrees of what trust means, but I think at some level we must trust. And it can be effective. No other organization can collectively offer more than a faith-based organization because of its diversity and its extensiveness. And so there's a book by Reverend Melvin Tuggle who, it's called Churches and Institutions Collaborating for Public Health, and he really talks about public health from an inner city perspective. But one of the things that I thought was important was a validation of what Jean Duff said. And she said, with the church, we can expect acceptance, access, information, support, and above all, a level of trust. And without the involvement of the church, you might even have barriers, if not a blockation to your public health initiatives. The other thing, of course, that we always battle when we do public health work is sustainability. And one of the comments that was made by more than one of the speakers in the plenary sessions is that after funding, the church remains. So if you're looking at sustainability, you got to look at what are the infrastructures that remain. A church can remain. And really importantly, core values remain when programs go away. And so that's a part of what I believe the church, the role it can play. Then in Dr. Etienne's talk, he talked about what was required to have universal change if we're thinking about how we might change our world. And one of the main elements, he said, that culminated it was participation. How do we get people involved? And he said we needed consumer involvement to community empowerment to global change, that's the direction it flowed. And one of the things that has impressed me about the structure of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, I don't think it always plays out this way, but I think it was part, at least that's my projection onto it, it was part of why the system was put the way it was, because they did understand that you needed participation. And our model is from membership up. When there is a decision to be made about a member, it's made at the local church from the membership base up. We get advisement and direction, expertise, all kinds of things from leadership. But we are a bottom-up model, and I think that's what's needed for part of the change. So in terms of part of the role, in terms of how rights of health are impacted, Dr. Villar said we have a crisis now of energy, of food, of environment, and of economic. And he talked in there how faith-based communities or organizations can build and advocate for a value health-driven life. And I think this is where we can start moving things by using our connectedness in the church. One of the comments that was made, and I just had to stick it in here because I really think we need to educate WHO, not necessarily that they're not educated, but just that we don't necessarily see it that way, at least I don't. There was a comment about how do we see ourselves in connection to them or how might we be different from them. And the comment they made was that we are different from, that the WHO is different from faith-based organizations because they look at the entire community. And you know what? I think we need to be known as a church that believes in the entire community as being our community. And so I think some of us fear that, but I think it's a balance of how to be in the world and not of it, and to be comfortable. We talked about yesterday being comfortable with core values of who we are, so we're not afraid to go out. It takes me back to all my work in attachment work with young children. If I'm secure in my attachment, usually it's to the caregiver, and then I talk about our caregiver being God. If I'm secure in this attachment, I don't fear going out. And so that becomes an important part of being involved in our entire community. So it made me think, though, what is the church? What are they asking me to talk about? What is the church? For some people, church is their religion. Okay? For some, it's an organization that you might belong to. For some, it might be the actual structure, the building itself. For some, it might be the congregation that you actually worship with. And for others, it's the actual person. Well, for me, I believe it's each one of us individually make up the church. We are the church. Individually, alone, I am a church. I am part of a bigger one, but I make up. I'm an important element. And there's all those analogies that each one of us is a different part of the body of the church, and we're all important in our diversity because we might have different roles. But I'm going to take each one of these components, and there may be more that you think of, and just talk about how differently and collectively each component can add to our world community of how the church can impact change and prevention. So as a religion, I think what we can offer is values. In terms of the religion base to church, I think we can often offer human rights values. In that value system, the sense of purpose or belonging to a cause, the meaning making that is so important to human life. As an organization, I feel we can offer global organization or connectedness. It's amazing when my colleagues look at me and they go, how do you know somebody over there in that part of the world? How did you get over there? Oh, I can't tell you how amazed the top leaders in my field are because I have connectedness to people across the world. We are an extensive community. And so that's so true. We have natural connections globally. Natural ones that occur. If somebody says, you know what, I'm going to this part of the world, I could say, you know, even if I don't know somebody, I know somebody who does. And I feel safe. You know, when you travel and you're like, wow, I'm going to be going over there. And I always feel safe when I travel because I'm like, I can find a church or somebody, you know, because we have those natural connections. We also have media connections globally. There's different stations that we have with satellites. I know that my parents watch, you know, LBN or the Hope Channel or some, you know, Adventist television, for glimpses, they hope they'll see me go through church or, well, you know, whatever. But they make those connections to those programs. They live in very rural Canada. They get fed by some of that stuff. And some of the stuff we've talked about and that I think some of the stations are trying to do is with those satellites in many churches around the world, those churches can offer programs that they couldn't otherwise offer with expertise that's there, and we need to tap into what do those communities need so we do those kind of programs. I think we need more feedback of what kind of programs would help you to bring the community in and offer it. The other thing that we can do globally is make it a priority of mission, and I think that's what this conference is really about, is that we can, by having something like this venue, statements that we're writing back, try to make a priority of mission of interest in the health in the world's people. And the use of the pulpit, like Dr. McBride talked about yesterday, that we can use the pulpit to share the message of human value in connection to the community. In terms of, we can also then do prioritization of resource allocation. We talk often about churches being poor or not having a lot of resources. It may not be financial resources. It might be resources of time. It might be resources of personnel. It might be resources of relationships that can be developed because I might work here, that other person might work there, and you might have ties to a community that will bring resources in and unite them in the purpose of making a difference in your community. I think, I thought of this after, and I said, you know, what we really need is in our whether it's general conference or division or something, we need a grants office to really start thinking about these collaborations and writing those kinds of grants that would bring faith-based organizations into the world community. What about the church's role as a building? I can't tell you how many times I have thought and have seen the importance of the facility itself being able to be used by the community when it sits empty for days on end, and how important that might be. But we can offer the place for prevention. How about during the week we offer respite care for those mothers who have special needs children that are exhausted and may beat their child if they don't get an hour break? How about offering a place for shots, immunizations, a place where you can pick up your WIC stuff or your food bank, whatever it is. I don't know the contextual issues of your local community and its major needs, but this could be the place where it happens. I think every church should be a public health facility. In fact, when I go around the world, particularly in the United States, but I do talks for the National Alliance of Drug Endangered Children, and I'm speaking to communities around the United States, talking about making a difference in the lives of the drug-endangered child, I tell them one of their resources is a faith-based organization, and in America, they get a tax break for being a charity because they're supposed to make the world better, right? And so I tell them, this is where I get in trouble, but I tell them, if your churches and your community are not offering back to the community, you should ask them to be taxed and you get the tax money. But anyway, so I don't get very popular on that one, but I think we can become that public health facility. At the church I go to, we have Blue Jean Sabbath. And what that means is once a month, we get together, and we have church, but then we wear our blue jeans, whatever it is that you would wear that you would go work in. We just call it that because we have a lot of young people there. And we go do a service to the community. And there's four or five projects of extreme need in our community, and we all go together and do those. So these are ways of connecting, prevention. You know, we do the Stop Smoking program, so I have to throw that in there because that is something we offer very often. But there, we can expand that. Why can't we let AA or NA meet in our building? Why can't we let whatever groups that are struggling for where could they meet because they're going to get together and put some program together? Why can't they be in our building? And then skill building. You know, often we do couples and parenting, but not just didactic teaching. Actually getting in there and saying, what are your issues? I haven't found a church to do this yet, but I go to a clubhouse in one of the poorer areas where I am. And I go twice a month, and I just sit there with parents. We do it by age group. And I just sit with parents, and we talk about how hard it is to parent those kids and maybe some ideas that they get from each other, not just me, the professional, that they get from each other. But just somebody there saying, I'm willing to be there with you, it gets them there and involved to do that. And resiliency work. Oh, you know, when I put in there repairs, right? You know, resiliency is keeping kids busy. Right? We've got to keep them busy. And I didn't hear Gary's talk, but I'm sure he brought all of that up. You know, but I was thinking about, how about in your church parking lot, or whatever it is you have around there, somebody donates an old car. And they, you know, somebody who's retired must know how to take cars apart and fix them. And remember, keeping the mind busy, so this is how you can market it to the elderly, is a huge asset to the church. Because if they keep busy, they prevent Alzheimer's, they prevent all kinds of things, that their social support system, their immune system gets boosted, you know, all of that kind of thing. You could market it. Avoid the flus, avoid cataracts, whatever it is, you know, and get them. But we could have all kinds of activities. You know, you could have, teach them how to do cake decorating, whatever, teach them how to do their hair, something like that. But things where we get the young people involved. Even from the nutrition perspective, gardening. I know our church in Canada, one of the local country churches, they decided to be a part of the community. They were going to grow, I forget, a couple of different vegetables and then just distribute it out and give it free at the market or whatever from the church. And I said, fine, but you know what? You don't have hardly any children in your church anymore. They've all left you. And across the street from you, granted it's a Catholic school, but there are a ton of children across the street. I said, I'll even buy you all the seeds. If you don't just plant your own garden, you let those kids come over and plant their garden there and let them give it out to the community. But we have to find ways to make these connections. So there's all kinds of different things. One of the churches in Loma Linda does an Excel, they call it Excel program. It's basically where they get all of us as professionals to volunteer at least an hour once a week or every 2 weeks and tutor the kids who are failing in school, particularly in the high-risk areas. But those kinds of things. Our hospitals need to be seen as somewhere that can offer expertise to the community by offering programs or those kinds of things. Our schools. You know, there's a school in Australia, it's an amazing school, that they put themselves together to do kind of alternative learning. They still do, you know, make the educational milestones, but they do it in a way through gardening, through raising animals, through all kinds of experiential things for kids who are getting kicked out of school. And it's amazing the turnaround, because these kids had a hard time in the learning environment, the kinds of things they were able to do. And the other thing that a facility does is visibility. If nothing else, people know you're there because you have a structure. And I think we need to do something about our visibility as well. Then our role as a congregation, we can offer diversity. You know, so many times people see diversity as a problem, particularly in research and methodology. You're like, oh, all the diversity that I have to account for in my statistics. When in fact, diversity is a gift from God. It is an amazing, wonderful thing. I don't want everybody to be like me. What's there to learn in life if everybody's like you? And how boring it would be, right? But I need to learn to appreciate and value difference. Not be afraid of it, but appreciate and value. I think there's so much ethnicity we can offer the world in understanding different groups. The ideas of gender, like were brought up yesterday. Age. What other place do you go to where the age span can be so broad? What other natural organization has that kind of membership? The other thing is profession. There's all kinds of professions and all kinds of things. Even SES, that diversity to understand different things that might be happening in different parts of our community. And experience. Experience key to understanding what the community might need. Then, of course, the really important part here is the church's role for me as a person. And for me, that's service. You know, what I offer as a person, all of these ideas don't work unless you have somebody actually doing the activity. And so we can be the dynamic factor in prevention and change. We offer passion because of our value system. We can have, when God ignites you with passion, you have no choice, right? If you get ignited about something that God, you know, I grew up the shyest little girl you can imagine. I wouldn't even ask to go to the bathroom. I was afraid of everything. But when God said, you've got to speak on behalf of children, I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing, but, you know, I will. And it's just amazing how he can work through you that way. Skills. Individual, each one of us have different skills, a different part of the church body. Time, you know, that's a precious commodity. None of us have enough of that. But together, maybe I'll do this one, you do next one, you cover my back, I'll cover. Maybe we can find ways to make time, because really that's a key element to what the communities need from us. And then for ourselves, sometimes what we are in our community is a model. Sometimes you'll never know that you modeled something. The way that you treated somebody at the store, at the bank, in your regular life, wherever it was, you can be that model. Or perhaps you are a mentor, which Gary was talking about. But you are a member, and as a member, we have a way to make that thing. You know, Gene Duff talked about what are some of the barriers that we have to this potential. And, you know, she said we were undocumented, unrealized, and fragmented. And so some of the things that I think we need to look at as particular barriers to us, and some of them is when health is linked to morality. I think that is a particular barrier for us. I think we can't get involved in where we need to be. For me, growing up and being a psychologist, I find the barrier in mental health very frequently in terms of helping people. Abuse. I was part of a group who wrote a book on... give me 2 seconds. But I was part of a group who wrote a book on child abuse, and that it had all kinds of information that will be useful to the church in understanding and helping its membership. It could not sell because nobody would buy something about abuse in the church until there was a label that the bookstore put on the Adventist bookstore put a label on that says somebody you know might need this. Then it started selling, right? But these barriers that we have, and of course, one of the key ones that I worry about so much is the barrier we have to helping those with diseases that we have morality links to, like HIV and AIDS. I do believe that we have a value-driven perspective that can help move things and help move it politically, still remaining separate church and state. It's not, you know, I don't know if this is big in your culture. I can't even vote in the United States because I'm not American. But I'll tell you, when I talk about supportive programs, everybody thinks I'm a Democrat. When I talk about the fact that there needs to be boundaries, everybody thinks I'm a Republican. I was like, I don't even know all of those things. I don't, you know, to me, it's like, what is the balance in life? And if we can stay away from aligning just to a political power, as opposed to our value systems, we can reach more people rather than being divisive and those kinds of things that occur. So I had more in there, but I think... The premise of where I was going in order to end this now is really related to the fact that why should we do this? And the why that I put in there is because God created us in His image. And if you heard Jerry Winslow's talk, he really actually, it was very similar to how I was ending this. And we're created in God's image. God is love. And love requires us to just reach out and love those around us as well as ourselves. And that's the empowerment that we need in terms of being the church to our community.